Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is Now or Never. And tomorrow's Feedback Friday. So we'll dive into the news cycle. I'll rant and hopefully you can withstand maybe some of my criticism or sarcasm, but anywho, because there's some really key things that people want to talk about, and I know everybody's chomping at the bit with the news cycle. And you know what, folks, it's only going to get worse. As a matter of fact, we'll talk about that. You're going to want to actually hear what, my view. I think you're going to want to hear my view on, where we are in life, where we are in this stage, in this process of, the whole reason why mankind is on this round, big, huge amalgamation of rock, water, and all of these things spinning around, hurling through space around this thing we call our sun. Mm-hmm. Welcome back, Paul.
Thank you.
And so... let me just say this as a precursor for tomorrow. Get your lives in order. Get your lives in order and start doing what needs to be done. But with that, we're covering Article 3. We're actually talking about admitting states into the Union. And we just read Section 3 of Article 4 and its first subsection. And within that first subsection, it talks about, admitting states into the Union, but there's no power granted to the federal government to have any control whatsoever over those states when admitted into the Union. Mm-hmm. Nothing alluding to, they can take some of your land if they think it's really necessary. And so... I'm here to tell you folks that they can't. They can't possess forests. They can't possess reservations, conservations, sanctuaries. They have no authority to do that. So anyway, here we go. So now we're going to... go ahead, Paul. Go ahead.
So before we get away from this first part of mm-hmm. Section 3,
yeah,
There is something that I want to touch on. Nor any state be formed by the junction of two or more states or parts of states without the consent of the legislatures of the states concerned as well as the Congress.
Right, right, right.
I have had conversations with people in Illinois uh-huh. that would like to get away from Chicago.
Right.
Okay. And I guess what that would mean is, they would want to be their state, like New Illinois or something like that, and let Chicago do its own thing. But what you'd have to have is the legislature. You'd probably have to petition your legislators to make that happen.
Well, so this is the state legislature would not allow that to happen. They won't allow that to happen. But this is how you force them to allow it to happen.
How?
Your counties. You need to get all of your counties in sync demanding full compliance of the Constitution and forcing the state government into complying to the Constitution. Now, you realize that currently the way the makeup of that state is, it's based on democracy, and Chicago will always have the rule. So then what you do is you say, okay, then we're going to demand a constitutional convention. And we're going to seize control of the state constitution. We're going to ignore the democratic form of, districting. And we're going to make sure that the counties have a protected majority over the amending process of the Constitution. In other words, instead of it being a democratic form of 50% plus one in a popular vote to amend the Constitution for the state, we're going to say that you have to have two-thirds or three-fourths of the counties basically pass the amendment, just like we do with the federal Constitution. And we're going to change the entire Constitution to limit the state government. And so what ends up happening is when they really see what you're going to be able to do with a state constitutional convention, how does a state constitutional convention go down? It'll go down the same way the original state constitution actually went down, because who are the sovereigns of that state constitution? Who are the parties to that compact?
The representatives of the counties.
Well, the counties themselves. See,
right. Okay.
So the reason I say this, folks, is because when the state of Illinois was created, it wasn't the people. If it was, if the power resided with the people at the time, then through the estate of those people as they died off, you know, who actually became, who controlled the government anymore? Was it transition from the estate to their children? No. This is why when the states convened constitutional conventions, the counties sent representatives, not the people. And they represented the county in the process of erecting the state and establishing that state constitution. So counties being perpetual, and actually counties being something that's actually increased in almost every state as population increased, now we can see how the counties in the state of Illinois can say, you know what, we don't like the way things are shaken out. We don't like it one bit. And so we're going to step forward as the parties of the compact, and we're going to basically, you know, work in a constitutional convention just like the federal constitutional convention, just like the first state constitutional convention, that we will ratify this by the county. And we're going to change the full ratification of the constitution by county instead of popular vote. That was a mistake that was put into the original constitution, and we're done with this. We're getting rid of this popular vote concept.
Great. Well, I'll tell you what, there is an...
So you know what'll happen. You know what'll happen. The power brokers over Illinois, over Chicago, will say, we can't allow that to happen. We would be better off letting them form a new state so that we can maintain our democracy and our control over the people.
Mm.
And there you will have two states, a new state. And so what will end up happening, so this becomes the conflict between the immovable force and the irresistible object. I love that paradigm.
Okay.
The immovable force is the federal government. The irresistible object is the state government wanting to cling to its power base. And so they're going to basically say, we need to cling to our power base. We can't allow this constitutional convention to go forward. And so what will end up happening is I think the federal government will try to step in and try to protect the democracy of the state by using the courts or what have you, because that's what they do now. They're protecting this destructive form of government. And they've been doing this for a very long time. That's what you find in this Counties Matter Most article. But I believe that this is what will happen. I believe that the counties will prevail, but the irresistible object and the immovable force being the federal government, they're going to say, no, we can't let this happen. And they will try to actually stop it. And it will move forward, and you'll end up getting two states. And as a matter of fact, what will end up happening is when the federal government comes along and says, you can't have county apportionment. You have to have apportionment by population because we've dictated that. This is where you slap that to the federal court down and say, sorry, you know, I understand that you've, coerced every other state in the union to do this, but we're not going to have to do it because you have no authority to do that. And actually, everything that's in that Counties Matter Most article, it literally alludes to the fact that they have no authority. They've redefined this whole concept of equal protection under the law, or equal protection of the law.
Okay.
Of the 14th Amendment, that equal protection clause. They can't, because the whole point of equal protection is regarding crimes and the harassment of individuals. There's no association to a Republican form of government and how the people chose to govern themselves.
I appreciate you addressing this very issue, because it's a hot one. There's an article online called Behind the Movement to Kick Chicago Out of Illinois. And there many rural and conservative residents of this, not
you know, send me a link to the organization, because I've reached out to the 51st state movement in Washington. I've tried to talk to Paul Preston in California, and they're seeking their own way of doing this. And if you ask me, folks, mm-hmm. Anybody that is going down this path, because what I have discovered is that the people that are brokering these things, there are people that are involved that are seeking financial support. And mm-hmm. in so doing, that creates these constraints. I think that the only way to do this is to actually use petitions and start changing the makeup of your county government. So that once you actually, take back your county government in the next two elections, because you can do this, then mm-hmm. I truly believe that, the next step is the state constitutional convention after two elections. In other words, in less than 2.5 years or three years, because we're a year away from one, right? Because you have one next year, and then we'll have another one in 2026. And so by 2026, you should actually have touched and forced all of these bad county commissioners out, because there's no way they'll hold that seat if you prove to the people that these guys are tyrants, that these guys are sellouts, selling us all out.
I'll send you this link. Okay. It's an interesting article, and it's just not Illinois that's concerned about this. So I will send that to you. And thanks for covering that. I didn't want, we're in Section 3, and I just didn't want to miss that, because it's a hot topic.
Yes.
Where democracy is being forced on states that have several more red counties than blue counties, several more.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. It's just the same thing with New York. The city of New York, and you know what? Maybe the state of New York could go back to New Amsterdam and let the city of New York keep its name as the state of New York, city of New York, and then the New Amsterdam be the remnants, because that was the origins of New York anyway. That was the name of that colony.
Right.
Anyway, New York could do it. California could do this. California could break up into five states easy.
Right.
But every time we break these states up, folks, this is the reason why the federal government does not want this to happen, because they lose that. What happens is the power of the Senate. Mm-hmm. Just keep this in mind. The power of the Senate shifts. It waters down the blue control, because instantly you now have two red senators to neutralize the two blue senators sitting in the Senate.
Right.
In other words, you'll literally change the makeup of the Senate, as Indiana, as Washington, as Oregon, as California, as all of these states, as Nevada, as all of these population centers actually start breaking away, or I should say the counties breaking away from these population centers, this will actually change the makeup, and it'll actually provide some real, I'll say, protection in America as America starts growing with new states coming into the union. Because when we talk about this, let's go back to Article 4, Section 3. This first clause, anywhere where it basically states that only states can be formed out of territories, in other words, through the expanse process.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that says that? In other words, can the state of Canada become a state in the Union?
It can.
Did you say can or cannot?
I said C-A-N. It can.
It can. That's right. So in other words, folks, what most people look at in admitting states into the Union, it only applied to the territories to transform them into states. No, it also allowed any state, and as a matter of fact, the United States petitioned Canada, and they petitioned Mexico to join the Union.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that they refused, both of these nations refused, was because of slavery.
Wow.
But you think that they would consider? I honestly believe that the people of Canada would probably look at, you know, the potential. As a matter of fact, I would see it as the states of Canada want mm-hmm. to actually secede from Canada, the Union, and or the Commonwealth of Britain, and actually become a state in the United States.
Oh, I know there is such a movement. I don't know that it's very strong, but, you know, their federal government is.
Oh, I know. Absolutely. They're becoming so tyrannical, they could lose many of, I will just say, the central states.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yukon, Alberta, Saskatchewan, right? I think those are state names. And I believe that they would actually become a part of the United States pretty quickly.
Well, you know what I think we ought to do, GR? I think United States, I think we here really need to clean up our act.
And make this so
much more attractive to not, you know, the other. You've said this before on your show. Okay. What better foreign policy can we have than to say, we have freedom in America. Wouldn't you like to share it?
Yeah. Okay? And enjoy it. Yes.
Right. Yep. And have standards for what it would take to become a state in the American Union.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
What you're saying, I haven't heard say anywhere else. But we do need to clean up our act. So it looks good to come here.
Right. Okay. You know? So now we've kind of covered the really important stuff with Article 4, Section 3, Subsection 1. Now let's read subsection 2 of section 3.
Right. The Congress shall have power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory or other property belonging to the United States, and nothing in this Constitution shall be so construed as to prejudice any claims of the United States or of any particular state.
In other words, when a state comes into the Union and is finally admitted, the United States cannot prejudice the claims of that state over its own land.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they were protecting the states, not just the United States, because the United States, when it claimed land, they were making sure that no other nation could prejudice their claim.
Correct.
Right. So in other words, this was a, you know, I guess, when somebody looks at the colonization of the world, how the Western society was doing that and claiming land and so forth, you know, clearly the United States, based on the laws of nations, utilized the exact same language and the exact same principle of basically making claims to, you know, I don't want to say uncharted territories, but territories that weren't really controlled. In other words, Britain had laid claim to the vast expanse of America, but they didn't commit the resources there to say, we possess this.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was one of those things that, you know, they saw us expanding faster, especially with the migration of people leaving England mm-hmm. and leaving Europe to come to America to actually watch this great expanse and what we called manifest destiny. It was just a matter of time, and England realized that they could not afford to extend themselves to protect the Pacific Northwest and the British Columbia, so they did what they could to hedge off basically the expanse of America into the, I will say, the western side of Canada. Mm-hmm. And the reason why America didn't express a lot of interest is because when you look at what was the offering of that northern shore of Canada, British Columbia, mm-hmm. and so forth, it's not that it doesn't thrive, but look at where the majority of the money comes from. Now, there may be gold in them there hills. We don't know. Mm-hmm. It is just so cold and so hard to access all of that area that, right. I think it was a strategic decision to say, this latitude right here does allow for a decent amount of food growth.
Right.
Look at British Columbia. Look at the state of Washington. The state of Washington has some of the most fertile land. We produce a lot of wheat out of Washington State. How much wheat does British Columbia produce?
I don't know.
They don't have the fields to do it. It's all mountains. If you look at Washington State is probably the last area other than the interior. So when you look on the interior of the Rocky Mountains of Canada, now you're talking about almost tundra, where the land is so cold that you can't grow wheat there because it's just this permafrost. If nobody ever heard of permafrost, look it up. It's, it's not a place. I mean, you never have to worry about being overheated, and dying of heat exhaustion when you live in the land of permafrost.
Right. Okay.
So anyway, I don't want to belabor the point, but my point is when we really looked at this whole concept of expanding, America had its designs in expanding because that was innate within the states. We talked about this during the ratification debates that the Tennessee, or I should say the Carolinas, Virginia, and even Pennsylvania was, extending themselves to the West Coast. As territories, as individual states, they created these territories to expand that state. Well, that state decided under the United States that they were going to be broken up and create new states, which was great. It was so divine because just think if we had just a small cluster, if we maintained the original 13 and all of the land of the United States was controlled by 13 states, it would be a lot easier for the globalists to buy and control.
Mm-hmm.
And so the more, and as a matter of fact, if we start creating more states out of the existing 50 and turn out to be 70 or 80 states, then now it gets even harder for somebody to go in and buy up those legislatures and those counties. Well, the counties won't change much, but it does create a real problem in trying to buy and control state legislatures.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
More is better, folks. Okay.
All right. So let me see. Nothing shall. We actually covered pretty good about prejudice and claims of the United States in earlier discussions as well.
So the only other thing that I think, because I want to bring these things up, because if you don't ask them, then I'll bring them up. Out of the final subsection 2 of section 3, this little comment regarding territories and property belonging to, that the federal government does have the authority to create the needful rules and regulations and the power to dispose. When they say to dispose, to admit them into the union or to trade them back to Britain to obtain something else. But once that land becomes a state, it is no longer available to the federal government to dispose of. So in other words, we were playing games with our own territories. We're going into break here. But we're playing games with our own territory at this point in time, to where we were actually making and putting things on the table to exchange with Britain and to play games, or I should say exchange with Mexico, you know. And so this is where they were disposing of and consolidating the swath of land from the Atlantic to the Pacific. So with that, we're going to a break, and we'll come back with Section 4 of Article 4. We'll be right back, folks.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, Paul, we're going to dive into Section 4, because I think we covered the details enough of Section 3.
Mm-hmm.
So Section 4 is pretty interesting because it kind of reveals the state's responsibilities here. So
okay,
let's go ahead.
The United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion. And on application of the legislature or of the executive, when the legislature cannot be convened, against domestic violence.
So in other words, this goes to Article 1, Section 8, subsection 15, where Congress shall have the power to call forth the militia to suppress or to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections. So in other words,
repel invasions.
And repel invasions right here, right? And so there is a direct association to a state's responsibility in one, protecting itself, as well as holding the federal government to, you know, because we're guaranteed that they will protect us.
Mm-hmm.
And they are not protecting us. They are deliberately destroying us, which is why I hate to say this, folks, but it doesn't matter how good these people are. They cannot be admitted into citizenship. They can never be admitted into citizenship. And as a matter of fact, I would say that the only way that they and their children should be allowed into citizenship is, you know, they just have to be here, you know, not ever having to committing crimes or those types of things. We have to either set up something or repel them, because the Constitution demands the repelling of them. And I think that at this juncture, our ability to absorb this rampant disregard for the law, we have to repel these folks.
Okay. Well, there
and
is
hold on,
way.
Hold on. I'm not done.
Okay. All
we
right,
have
sorry.
To repel these folks, and we have to go to Article 4, Section 3, and basically send these folks back and tell the folks of Uruguay, or not Uruguay, let me see here, Ecuador, not Ecuador, doggone it, El Salvador. I knew it started with an E, not a U. Anyway, El Salvador, Nicaragua, Panama, and Honduras, all of these Latin American countries that are struggling and, you know, despotic, they need to be sent back and basically told, we need to become states in the Union. We need to apply to become a state in the United States. And then what we would do is we would admit Central America, because that's what we're talking about, Central America into the Union as a state. And that these other states would be broken down as counties and subdivided into a set of counties. Mm-hmm. This way, they could be, you know, adopted, brought through, and trained. It'll take probably 40 years for these states to, you know, for a generation to pass and enough people to understand English, the law, you know, and so forth, our currency, that they would finally be admitted into the Union. But at this point, this is the only viable way to keep people there, to make this land a territory, not to, you know, so first off, the federal government, you know, the day we shut down the teat of government, because the only reason these people are coming here is because there's the big teat. Mm-hmm. And once we say that this teat is an illusion, that, you know, you can't be here for nobody can be here for the teat, not even the people that live here. The federal government has no authority to do these things. And the states cannot, you know, basically be overwhelmed by this type of burden. So right. Bottom line, every state in the union has this responsibility. And I say that we actually, in the process of repelling this invasion, expand America the way that the process is supposed to work. I believe that right there is, you know, what the Lord foreordained in his view of globalism. Mm-hmm. And then that would force Mexico, because they would be in between. It would force the people of Mexico to, you know, finally make the move and give up their corrupt government.
So I just looked this up. You know, the population of Mexico is almost half that of the United States. What do you suppose representation would look like? I think there's a case for breaking up more of the United States into, as you said, you know, 60 or 80 states.
Uh-huh.
To preserve what we have in terms of Americanism as we're bringing in other states or other.
Correct. Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, because so. Mexico could actually create a large representation. But let's look at it this way. Mm-hmm. When we look at the Electoral College, right? Mm-hmm. And right. We look at the choosing of the president, and it goes to the 12th Amendment and Congress, that we would actually see that the Electoral College would vote by the state.
Correct.
In other words, and this flies in the face of the popular vote, that one state would actually get one vote out of the congressional representation.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, you know, you get two senators and then you have all of these electors for each congressional district. If we actually changed that to where because if we utilize the 12th Amendment, that actually protects the choosing of the president.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather see Congress moving forward in choosing the president by delegation than I would the way the Electoral College and the popular vote is going.
Mm-hmm.
Because the House of Representatives, the loony bin, to where these people think that they can do anything and everything, you know, is just out of control. But anyway, that's...
I think this document really attests to the brilliance and inspiration of the founders. It's amazing.
Yeah, because one of the things that they did was they boiled it down to say your representation should actually choose the president. I just think the only flaw was that too much power could actually go, because if Mexico actually became one-third of the voting power in America, that, you know, it would take a while for them to get there, but still – they could choose. Well, so here's the whole point. I don't think it really matters as much, folks, because when you really look at it, if we are vigilant in ensuring and enforcing the Constitution, then the Constitution cannot get amended by, you know, just a single state that has a large population.
Mm-hmm.
It requires 3/4 of the states to do that. And then I think over time, I believe in admitting, you know, Mexico into the Union, there probably needs to be a time span that if Mexico is to subdivide into multiple states, it can only do so once every 10, 15, 20 years. In mm-hmm. other words, kind of constraining it from growing too fast into its representation and in the Senate as well as in the House of Representatives for the choosing of the president and all of that. But anyway, I just think that there's things we can do because there's going to be large nations that are going to come that we're going to say, we want to be a part of this union. Look at South America.
Sure.
I mean, the people of Brazil love liberty. They're not happy with their government. Chile the same way.
Right.
Right. So we have to have a good progressive way of, you know, allowing things to slowly transition so that the understanding of a Republican form of government is critical. And right here in Section 4, the states actually have a right. And this is what needs to happen in the constitutional conventions of the states. Every state has to assert that it will form its Republican form of government based on the federal model, that counties will be guaranteed one representative and that the apportionment will be broken down. And, you know, in all honesty, the state legislature should actually consider expanding to accommodate for the growth of the people. You know, in other words, they can't just create a physical room and say, okay, we're limited to how many chairs we can get into this room.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, I think that they actually need to start thinking in virtual space to allow, you know, little pockets across the state where your state legislatures can all kind of convene into a central county to where that county would have and accommodate, you know, the virtual meetings for everybody to kind of form during sessions so that you're not sitting in the Capitol anymore. The only reason that the Capitol even existed is because they didn't have the communications that we have today.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in a representative government, the representative should really be more accounting to the people, not, you know, hiding from the people in the state Capitol.
Correct.
So if we start actually using technology and, you know, using the brain power that we have, I believe we could create some of the best representative government that the framers couldn't even fathom.
Mm-hmm.
All based on this one document. So now we've finished Article 4. And now we're jumping into Article 5. This is the process, folks, of the amendment of the Constitution. This is what has to happen. This is, you know, if you want to make a change, if you want to actually have Obamacare, then we have to amend the Constitution. And in so doing, this is the process that has to be applied. Only this. You can't just have an act and create Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's go ahead.
Okay. All right. The Congress, whenever 2/3 of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution or, on the application of the legislatures of 2/3 of the several states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which in either case shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of this Constitution when ratified by the legislatures of 3/4 of the several states or by conventions in 3/4 thereof, as the one or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress, provided that no amendments which may be made prior to the year 1808 shall in any manner affect the first and fourth clauses of the 9th section of the first article, and that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate.
Okay, so we got a little coloring here, right? Mm-hmm. A little coloring going on. And so when we look at the very first part, it's a no-brainer that Congress can actually recommend amendments to the states. So Congress has the power to basically, and as a matter of fact, most of the amendments that Congress has done, in other words, how many conventions have we had?
We haven't had any Constitution conventions.
There you go. Okay, so in other words, every single one of our amendments has come from Congress. But the origins of those amendments didn't always come from Congress, like the Bill of Rights. The states basically said, we want these amendments, and guess what? Congress obliged and created the amendments and sent them out.
Right.
If I remember correctly, and I'd have to do this, I'm not going to do it now. Maybe we'll do this in December. I'll do this in December for the Bill of Rights. I will go through and count, but I believe it's 20 out of 28 of the amendments that we have originated in the states.
Okay.
In other words, the states actually were the ones that drove the changing or the amendments to the Constitution. When you look at the origins, they originated, like Prohibition originated in the states. The repealing of Prohibition originated in the states. The Bill of Rights, that's 12 amendments. 11 of those have been ratified. So right there, you have 13. We already know that the 11th Amendment originated in the states because they didn't like the overreach of the federal courts. So the 11th Amendment, so that's 14. Mm-hmm. I only have to come up with six more, and I know for a fact that the 17th Amendment was derived from the states as well.
It was?
Yes. The 17th Amendment, Congress is having a problem. If you do the research, the Senate was having a problem obtaining consensus because many states were withholding their senators, refusing to seat them. And this was all a progressive duping to change the method of how the senators were chosen from the state. So there were progressive state legislatures that refused to fulfill or seat their senators.
Can I ask you why that was? They were not even...
They wanted to shift the choosing from the state legislatures, from themselves to the people. Because they knew how destructive it would be if they gave the people the controls of the choosing of the senators. They were progressives. They didn't care about their suffrage. They only cared about setting up policies that would lead America into the gutter.
What would have been the right way for us to deal with states that didn't send their senators?
Well, so
because it was problematic.
So
right?
Yeah. So Congress. So you got to remember that the progressives were already in control of D.C.
Okay.
And so Congress wasn't going to do this, but this is what Congress should have done. Congress basically should have invoked Article 1, Section 5, or wherever it is where they basically set forth the time of choosing because the states were failing to do that. And if the states didn't do that and they didn't choose, then they should have actually gone after those state legislatures for violating their oath of office because by this point in time, the 14th Amendment was there. They had this obligation to choose a senator and to basically seat that senator in Congress. Because it's right there that the state legislature must do this.
Mm-hmm.
So they should have actually started enforcing and replaced or removed every state legislator. This is where if they had the power to hold these guys accountable. And the more people understood that they had this power to hold them accountable, America would not be in its sad state that it's in today.
Right.
This is the beauty and the providence of the 14th Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
which actually was given to us by Congress. It was not given to us by the states. But like I said, we can easily go through this and we'll find that the majority of the amendments, you know, actually came from the states. You know, like the most of the civil rights elections, voting, right? The rights for blacks to vote, I believe that the first one came from Congress, but the right for women to vote came from the states. Mm-hmm. The ending of poll taxes, I believe that came from the states. I know that the lowering the age to 18 came from the states.
Right.
So when it came down to individual rights, the majority of all of these things that were really that critical in our liberties came from the states. Go ahead.
No, I'm agreeing with you.
Okay, so with
the
next part of this that's orange shall be valid to all intents and purposes as a part of this Constitution when ratified by the legislature of 3/4 of the states. So what's happened here? The reason why that's orange is there have been amendments in the past that were not ratified properly.
Which ones?
The 17th and the 16th Amendments are okay. For sure. There was a lot of contention over the 14th Amendment. Mm-hmm. Remember, there were states that were trying to say, we rescind our ratification. And they mm-hmm. were basically claiming that the 14th Amendment wasn't applicable, where the federal government said, you know what, we didn't say you could repeal or rescind your ratification. Mm-hmm. You may try to do that, but that's they created this confusion over the 14th Amendment. And the federal government never accepted those recensions.
Okay. And it was in their authority not to do so.
Right, because most of those recensions happened during the radical Republican tenure. It all happened within a year or two. And so what ended up happening was the 14th Amendment, they knew was ratified, and they couldn't just pull a fast one, which is why they, in 1871, created the Organic Act. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's something we'll have to dig into. I'm not sure we have the time to
No, right we'll now, have to do that as a separate document to go through. But
right.
You're absolutely right. The Organic Act and some of its subsequent things that were driven out of that, it begs coverage. We mm-hmm. do need to dive into that. So the next part is this red part that says, provided that no amendment be made. That right there basically points to the green area, because an amendment was made that actually creates a conflict with this part of the Constitution. In other words, this green area protects us from the 17th Amendment.
Okay. It's
that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. So when they say state, are they talking about the people of the state? Specifically,
no.
Who are they referring to when they say that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage? Whose suffrage are they talking about?
They're talking about the legislature.
Legislature, correct.
Right, who had the suffrage in the Senate.
Correct. And so today, the legal speak and the redefining of what this says right here, they're basically, because I've actually heard a college professor, a highly respected college professor on the Constitution, say that the states still have their equal suffrage in the Senate. It's just that it's shifted over to the people. No. This specifically did not speak about the people of the states. They had their representation in the House. This was speaking specifically of the state legislature, the sovereigns of the state, and their suffrage in the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And so, to be clear, the 17th Amendment violates this, that every state in the Union that did not ratify the Constitution cannot be held to the 17th Amendment. It cannot be applied because this line right here protects them
And I mean, they didn't ratify the 17th Amendment.
If they did not ratify it, they're protected. They can still appoint and choose. The state legislatures can still choose their senators. This includes Utah. This includes Georgia, Florida, South Carolina. I even think Virginia. There's a lot of states, the seven states. Now, here's the thing. And this is in my article on the recension of the 17th Amendment, that any state in the union can now actually rescind their ratification of the 17th Amendment. How is this so, GR? How can we do this? Because the federal government actually opened the door or opened the can of worms to allow this one amendment for the states to change their positions. Because in 2010, Biden demanded that the state of Delaware change its positions. And in so doing, the federal government accepted that change, which means that the federal government has to allow the change to go either way from every state. In other words, they've opened the door of rescinding the 17th Amendment. The door has to swing both ways. In other words, sure, the federal government can't say, well, we'll allow you to change your decision if you didn't ratify it. No. They don't get a choice of which way that door swings.
So Biden virtue signaling opened the door.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Isn't that so funny? I mean, yes. I don't know if you just hit a bell intentionally there, but that was just prophetic. Thing. I mean, it's just like a bell going off in your head. You know, here is I call him the dolt. This guy is so stupid. I mean, it's one thing to have an illiterate president like Trump in office to not understand the Constitution. But Biden is so stupid that he actually opened the door for us to unravel the progressive grip of the 17th Amendment. Mm-hmm. Folks, what's keeping you? You need to start driving this dialogue in your state senate. You absolutely need to have, you know, your state legislature, period. Your state legislature needs to be aware of the fact that they can actually rescind their 17th Amendment immediately and go back to appointing, whether the people of the state like it or not.
Right.
Right. And this is how you can get the globalists away from controlling the Senate. This is why the Senate has been doing all the crap it's been doing. Like why Feinswine has become a millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. Anywho. Okay, so anything else regarding Article 5? Because we got about a minute left. Go ahead and air any grievances or saved grounds you may have.
We're probably going to have to get into the Article 5 convention, which is a big thing around the country. You think?
Yeah. So that's okay because we kind of talked about this before. I mean, any fool that wants to open that door and, you know, open Pandora's box of creating a constitutional convention, we covered this under Article 3. Clearly, the federal government has jurisdiction over this, period. It's right here. It talks right here that, you know, that Congress shall call for this convention, which means that they have the control over it as well. Anybody that says otherwise and looking at the state of affairs of the federal government and its overreach into healthcare, into energy, into education, into housing, into labor, you think that they're not going to overreach and control this convention?
Right. Do we want this Congress to have that?
Yes. So, Paul, we just ran out of time. We'll have to bring this back up. I think that's a good point. And we may actually have to do a dedicated show just on the convention, the conventionites and the anti-conventionites, and how preposterous their positioning really is. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty.